You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is the health benefits of love and laughter. Our guest today, Mitchell Rabin, is an international speaker and teacher, holistic psychotherapist, stress management consultant, licensed acupuncturist, coach, mediator, entrepreneur, business consultant, environmentalist, and writer. Now, is there anything that you don't do?
I don't tap dance.
You don't tap? He doesn't tap dance. But if that's not enough, he's also the host of A Better World radio and TV shows out of New York City and has been on the air since 1993. Now, Mitchell is also engaged in bringing innovative green technologies to the global marketplace, seeking to forward society into its next level of renewable, eco-friendly, sustainable use of energy. Now, in 1989, Mitchell founded the Center for Creative Well-Being, a stress management healing center in New York City. He also founded the Ecology Institute in 1990 and A Better World in 1992. Mitchell has appeared in several PBS special documentaries and was invited to write for the Huffington Post, which he does, along with writing for Natural News. Now, Mitchell has chapters in several books, including The Code, Fire Under Heaven, and the newly released edition of Heart at Work. He is in the middle of finishing a book on the idea he has originated of sacred stewardship. Mitchell, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be on your show today with you.
Well, I think the honor is mine to have you on here, and I think if anybody is listening to this introduction, you'll realize that there is a true common thread, and the thread that I see in going to your website and looking at your television show, listening to your radio show, is that you care about more than just what is within your sight. I mean, the concepts that you have, the things that you're doing to care about other human beings, to care about our planet so that it's here for generations to come, I think is wonderful. And
thank you.
You know, I look at this and I say, you know, I'm just thankful that you put in the time that you do, you know, so that it allows others of us to be able to do, you know, other things and still enjoy the benefit to this planet. So thank you.
Oh, sure. Well, you're most welcome. It's a deep calling, you know. We all, even though our souls sometimes feel like they get buried under the trials and tribulations of everyday life, when we quiet down enough and slow down enough, we can feel its heartbeat and its calling. And that's what I did, I guess, early in my life. And it had a lot to do with healing and in working with people to, you know, as my show calls it, create a better world so that we can all live in some kind of harmony in some kind of way and be looking out for each other. In some ways, I think of it as very simple. Even though life is very complex, there are certain simple values and certain themes that run throughout it, Alan, that if we really pay some attention to, all will take its rightful place. That's how I feel about it.
Well, I wish that there were more people that felt the same way. I'm really thrilled that we have people like you that is doing that. Now, in regards to our topic, which again I was so looking forward to because it's something that I believe in so much. At what point in your career did you start recognizing the health benefits of love and laughter, and how have you used it in your practice?
Yes, sure. Oh, I love that question. I noticed the benefits of laughter very early on in my life because I think, well, I just found that I loved laughing. I loved smiling. I loved the joy that people share collectively when they do this together. And I, you know, where we learned most of things, we learned it from our mother and our father. My father, while very loving, wasn't particularly funny, but my mother was much more zany, and she had a very lively sense of humor. So I think I learned both humor and probably a little sarcasm from her. So it was very early on that I got a sense of its potential. And I found that in, you could say, the development of my own personality, there was sort of a laugh button that I found, and I found that I was making people laugh, just kind of not like a comedian, I don't think, but rather bringing a certain levity and lightness to a situation that would allow people, once they've smiled or laughed a little bit, engage each other in a different way. And as time went on and I became a psychotherapist, I found that the level of seriousness that people were living inside of was so serious that it needed just for nature to balance it out. So I found myself using humor with my clients. And I always saw a certain lightness show up in their demeanor, in their aura, you could say, and they immediately felt better. And I thought, this is a good feedback loop to establish. Let me keep feeding them here while listening deeply to what they consider their concerns. And the more I listened to their concerns and gave it the deep empathetic space it deserved and time, I also found by meeting them in that rather intimate space, I was then able to lead them to see the lighter side of what it is they're dealing with. And bizarre as it may sound, there's always a lighter side to the darkness. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I'm actually reminded of is something I learned when I spent time in Israel, actually, a number of years ago at a yeshiva, where I was a student for a brief period. And I was told about Jews in the concentration camps who were performing theater, music, and stand-up comedy at night after working in the labor camps.
Wow.
I thought, you've got to be kidding. But I realized that it was actually the humor, Alan, that probably kept these people alive. It's an actual survival mechanism. It's biologically programmed, and we need to be in touch with it for our, not only survival, but for our brilliant and happy survival, joyful survival.
Yeah, so, I couldn't agree more. And yes, as you were saying that, I was thinking that, you know, it would be not only their survival, and maybe for others, it helped them keep their sanity.
Exactly.
You know, so,
It has that effect. And, I mean, you think, if they, and then, you know, by, you know, as someone who works with therapists yourself, you know that this notion of recontextualizing or reframing is something that we are doing a lot. And when you see yourself in context or in comparison to other contexts or environments, all of a sudden what we're all going through doesn't seem usually all that bad. You know, there's a way of just standing things on its head, and we see that we've kind of jumped down this very narrow rabbit hole. And if we dare to come up and look around, we go, hey, you know, there's a world out here, you know. And before you know it, you are literally changing the neural web of the brain. You're giving it novel experience, which allows more synapses to occur and more dendrites to grow in a novel direction, which actually can lead to a shift in attitude and behavior of a client or of a person.
You know, and I think that's a great point that you bring up, because I think so many people out there, when they think about going to therapy, and they may think of it sort of as almost this superficial type of thing, and not realizing, as you mentioned, the changes that can happen in the brain. And one of the ways I had it explained to me that I thought was such a way that made it to where most anybody could realize it, and they said that, you know, that by adding in these positive things and by looking at things differently and having this laughter, even sometimes, you know, at a time in which, you know, one doesn't feel like it, they said, yeah, think of a mountaintop that's covered with snow, and you're making a different path. You're gliding down this mountain, and as you're going down it, you're setting up a new path. You were stuck in this old path, and you kept going down that same one, and this just allowed you to go and make new grooves in the snow as you go down and make new paths. And I thought, you know, for that was one of the greatest ways, and especially, you know, working with children and working with teenagers, for them to look at it and say, okay, there is a lot more going on here, and this is so much more worthwhile than one might normally think.
That's exactly right. That's a really good image for it. And, you know, in preparation for this interview and your show, I wanted to get some sense of your work, and your work with children is phenomenal, and families, I love it. And when you're working with children, there's a whole other access point that you have, which is a fresher brain, if you will, not so, you could say, tainted by, and fixed more than anything, and programmed. You've got much fresher snow, you could say, to plow, and many fewer grooves to overcome with charges. And that just allows imagination, which is that access point I was just referring to really flourish. Now, we can do this with adults as well, and teens as well. But with children, oh my God, they're brain is not as developed. They're actually spending more time in the alpha state. As we grow older, we spend less time in that creative, fertile state until we do things like meditate or do Qigong or Tai Chi or yoga, or right before we drift off to sleep, or if we're concentrating very focusedly on something, then we start to measure alpha waves in our brain. But children, that's their normal state. Actually, it goes from alpha even into theta, an even slower brainwave state, which gives them immediate access to source, you could say, to that imaginative flow and fount. And if you touch on that, oh my, what fun you have with your with the children, and to help them create new patterns for their lives. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And now you mentioned yoga. You mentioned, you know, a sense of focus and concentration to get us adults maybe back into into that level of alpha waves. What are some of the other things that we can do? And I think what a lot of people, a lot of feedback that I get by listeners that will will instant message us or email us or call in, and they just say that their lives have gotten to a point in which every minute is taken, every second is absorbed with something that, you know, they just want to pull away from all of it, but they don't feel like they can. They feel like they have to keep doing all of these things, you know, just to make ends meet, or just to, you know, put food in their children's, you know, stomach, or keep them in school, or put a roof over their head. And I mean, what are some of the other things that we can do to pull back that allows us to really get into that state of alpha? Because I think you bring up a great point. I mean, if we can get into that, and if it allows us to be more childlike, I mean, that is also going to help us relate to our children, and them to be able to feel like they can relate back. They don't have to look at us and think that we're this completely different creature that they can't relate to anymore.
Right, like an alien.
Yeah.
Sure. No, it's a very good area, and it has to do a lot with one of the hats that I wear, which is the stress management hat, consulting, which I do a fair amount of here in the middle of the Big Apple in New York City, as you can imagine. But in fact, stress has a rather even distribution at this point across the country and across the world for lots of reasons. And, you know, it's my opinion that one of those reasons is technology, while a great gift on one hand, is rather easily abused by people who are not responsible with it. And I see that a lot of young people, including teenagers, have become rather obsessed with cell phone use, with Facebook and Twitter use, and there is this constant feedback loop between them and others, which keeps them in a somewhat hyped up state about, you know, I dare say, a lot of rather trivial matters, and this is occupying their brain space instead of things of a slower, deeper rhythm or cycle that are also going on simultaneously, but are being robbed, just like if we're in the hyped-up beta state too much, we're missing the cellular rhythms of alpha and theta, just as what you're saying. So, of course, it's a good question. How can we reconnect with these quieter, deeper, subtler rhythms of our entire nervous system? It's not just the brain, but the brain as the kind of the representative of the whole system.
Right.
Well, there are a few ways, and they're all really simple techniques that anyone could really employ and engage anytime. And I'll keep it very simple. One is that we have to just close our eyes, and for all of 30 seconds, take a few very slow, deep, that is, abdominal breaths, diaphragmatic breaths, meaning we're engaging the entirety of the lungs, not just the upper portion, which is shallow breathing, which is what most people do, which is not properly oxygenating the whole body and all of our cells, because there's not enough oxygen just using the upper lobe of our lungs. Even if you're using both of them, it ain't enough. You've got to go deeper, and that's why we were given these lungs, to use our whole lung system. So that's number one. Immediately, Alan, there's sort of like, it's like kind of downshifting in a car. It's similar to that. You are going to another operational level, which changes the way we're literally thinking, because we just oxygenated our brain. So now we're gaining some leverage, you could say, on the internal operating system. The so-called monkey mind isn't as flip and glib as it was just half a minute before. And oh my word, if we were to do this for a full minute, double the benefit, double the fun. You know, so here I'm just giving your listeners the simplest of all types of leverage to utilize. And it sounds so simple because it is simple. And when it's actively engaged, it really works. Now, I would add to that something that's slightly less simple, but no less important, which is examining our belief systems about what it is that needs to be done moment to moment. You said minute to minute and even second to second. Wow, that's really going deep down the rabbit hole, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas if one pops out and it's all done through the imagination, which I think is God's greatest gift to humanity, our ability to creatively think and imagine and visualize. We can visualize ourselves standing above the earth looking down. I call it with my clients shooting oneself to the moon and looking down, and you can see just like that beautiful Apollo photograph that has become so popular since it was taken during the first few moonshots. You look down and you say, ah, that's me. God, am I small. Gee, look at all of this hustle bustle all over the planet. But, oh, there are these beautiful, you know, you start to zoom in a little bit like Google Maps. And you say, oh, this is so serene. What a beautiful green-blue planet. This is fabulous. And slowly, slowly, you re-enter your body and you say, what am I doing here? What is the deeper purpose of my life? How is what I do daily related? How does it correspond to what I feel is that deeper meaning and deeper purpose? Well, you know what? That changes the game. That sort of inquiry shifts everything. Things are then seen in a bigger, more profound perspective. So this obsession people have with keeping up with the Joneses, with material gain, with social recognition, it's not that those things don't have their place. But if you play this game and you shoot yourself to the moon and then slowly zoom in on your own life and your family's life, you see it from, you could call it, an elevated point of view. You are getting altitude on your life. And it's very, very quieting and useful.
Well, and I think that kind of ties into a lot of with the teens that we end up working with, because many of them are going to specialized programs, and what has happened is these programs are in the woods. They're set so far away that there isn't a cell site. You don't have an iPhone. You don't have these things. Oh, so now what has happened is that people have realized, just as you have explained it, that, you know, the best way to help these young people that are reaching a level of stress to the point that they're contemplating taking their own life, or that they're masking, you know, all of the stress by taking various drugs and everything, is to get them away from all of this, to get them out to these programs where they have people that provide to them love and laughter. So it takes this kind of full circle on what the subject matter is that, you know, what we've done with our society is we've grown up to this point of so much anxiety and so much going on that, you know, people are starting to do just as you're saying. Let's take them somewhere where they don't have all of this stress, where they don't have all of these things to deal with. And then go right into again, you know, our topic, which is if we're there, if we show them daily love, if we show them that, you know, they can laugh about so many things that are going on.
Yes.
and not have to worry about, you know, if they've answered the last 7,000 tweets that they got while they were gone.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. I am so glad to hear you saying that you take them out into the woods. And I just think that is one of the true healing places to bring all of us. I used to be connected to a group called the Wilderness Awareness School, which has now got another name. I think, what is it called? Eight Shields.org, I think it is, where this fellow who studied with famous tracker Tom Brown in the Pine Barrens in New Jersey, a fellow named John Young, I met back in the 90s, and he took with Native American elders whole families into the forest, and the children, teenagers, I would say, would go on vision quests where they would sit with themselves, I'm sure you're familiar, for a day or two or three, and they would drink just water or eat local foods, nuts and berries, what have you, and they would be meditating, and they would be given some tasks, and the others would be gathered and learning about different herbs and plants and their function and their healing power and what it's like to just be in nature and tracking. And oh my God, these kids just adored these processes in nature, and they were away from the electromagnetic fields that plague our urban environments these days, from the cell phone to the laptop and everything else. Even cars are loaded with these kinds of really toxic frequencies, and the way from, you know, the, you know, all the toxins that are really all over our environment and our food supply and our water supply. And you have to factor, I'm a holistic therapist, so I factor all of this in as aspects of what's creating health and well-being or borrowing on it. And I think that taking kids out into the natural vibrations and rhythms of nature is truly one of the best things you can do. So I laud what you're doing there.
Well, thank you. And what we're going to do now, and for everybody out there, please join us. We're going to take a few deep breaths. We're going to have a brief commercial break. Now, if for those of you that are driving your cars, don't close your eyes. But let's take a few deep breaths. We are speaking with Mitchell Rabin, and we are talking about the health benefits of love and laughter. We will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We are talking about the health benefits of love and laughter. Mitchell, when we went to commercial, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the, you know, dealing in the wilderness and things like that. But I also noticed that you also have a background in Chinese medicine and acupuncture. So how do these two blend, and how have you blended that into your holistic therapy practice?
Okay, Alan, you're opening something else up, but that's okay with me.
Well, I looked at the time and I thought, you know, I'm glad that we went through all of that, but I'm very intrigued on how you've added this in and how you make it work.
Sure. Yes. I was studying Tai Chi, it's commonly known as, Tai Chi Chuan, and Taoist meditation way back long ago. And I had the opportunity then to study acupuncture, which just opened up as a discipline in New York City. A school just opened up. I was among the first students to study it. I had a real affinity for Chinese philosophy and wisdom. And so I was just beginning my counseling and therapy coaching practice back then. And so I was sort of looking around for a way to include the body in what I was doing. And since I've learned a lot through the beautiful gift of neuroscience of the effect of speaking and, of course, laughing and loving, this what the show is all about. So there's a lot involving the body in the pure talking process. And there are different ways to talk, and there are different places from the body from which to talk. That's a whole other conversation. But when it comes to Chinese medicine and acupuncture and integrating that in, I was particularly interested in Chinese energetics, you could call it, or the five-phase theory, which correlates an emotion with a different organ system of the body. Well, that meant there was a direct correspondence, if you will, between, let's just say, the expression or lack of expression of anger with the liver and the gallbladder, both as organs and as meridians, which means the entire orb or energy flow related to the functioning of those organs. The Chinese think of flow and they think of energy. They don't really think in terms of solid organs. I mean, they know that they're there, but they're really concentrating not so much on the organ, but on its function and on the qi, which it's referred to, the life force itself that's flowing through that organ. So what does that open up to someone who looks holistically or in a multidisciplinary way, is another way of putting it, or integrated way? It opens up the vantage point of being able to use acupuncture or shiatsu or acupressure or even herbs to balance out the liver gallbladder system when there's an anger management problem. Well, you're not going to find that in your classic psychoanalytic or psychotherapeutic schools anywhere in this country or Europe. But indeed, you can influence the relationship a person has with anger. I'm using that as an example, by tweaking the liver and the gallbladder, by cleansing them, by detoxifying them, by strengthening them. Really interesting. And conversely, you are having a useful tonifying effect on the liver and the gallbladder simply by teaching someone some of the principles of anger management.
So, okay, so just to kind of mirror that back, so you know, obviously, yes, you're teaching them the tools of anger management. But at the same time, you're saying, so by having them detox their body and clear out something that there's a problem with the liver, they may not realize it, but by doing that, that is going to have a direct correlation to helping them with their anger management.
By George, I think you've got it.
I love it. So now let's
cool?
jump. That's great. Now let's jump to the opposite. The proactive part from the standpoint of what are the things that they can do? For instance, you know, with laughter, what are the organs that are tied more towards laughter or happiness or those emotions where, you know, the things that we can do to help on that side of it?
Yes. This is going to really shock you, Alan. Are you sitting down?
Yes, I am, sort of.
Oh, good. Sort of. Okay. Well, look.
Sort of. I have
a
kneeling.
Planted.
Yeah. No, I have a kneeling chair. So half.
A
half
kneeling
my,
chair. Okay.
Yes.
Well, kneel and pray when you get this answer.
Got it.
And that is for joy and happiness. The envelope, please. It's the heart.
I love it.
Shocking, but true. So yes. Is that, of course, it makes perfect sense.
That's right.
It makes perfect sense. It's related to the summer. It's related, of course, to the fire element. And it correlates. That's the yin organ, and it correlates with the small intestine. Again, that would be a tributary. No point in going in that direction. But it does show the integrated nature of Chinese energetics and Chinese thinking. All things are connected. So for the health of the heart, it's related to the health of digestion and the way the small intestine does its job. That's novel from a Western point of view, but from an Eastern Chinese point of view, it's just ho-hum the way it is. And it's really useful for us to expand our imagination in that direction. It's just a really interesting exercise.
Well,
so from the point of view of laughter and the health of the heart, you would say that any extra dosages of laughter, anything that will, you know, stimulate laughter. I mean, Norman Cousins is just such a wonderful example of this notion in his famous book, Anatomy of an Illness. God knows, going back at this point some 30 years, who, if you remember, Norman Cousins, who was, I think, the editor of the Saturday Evening Post, a famous magazine at the time, he came down when visiting, I believe, Moscow, certainly Russia, with a very rare blood disease that no Western medical modality was able to heal or cure. So he locked himself up in a hospital room with Marx Brothers movies, I believe Charlie Chaplin, and Laurel and Hardy, and just whatever movies that utterly tickled him pink. And he was laughing and hooting and carousing and carrying on. And, you know, everyone else is moaning and groaning all around him, but he's having his own private party. Well, what's interesting is they did blood tests before and after, and it showed that the blood values, the blood chemistry, very significantly shifted from before a certain movie and after he had one of his wonderful laughing episodes. That's how powerful laughter and joy are in our biochemical profile. So this was proven scientifically decades ago. And it takes a while for mainstream to kind of catch on. I feel like this is knowledge we all have instinctively, Alan. And then science comes along and says, hey, how do you like that? How do you like dumb apples? You know, in a practical way, because I'm a therapist and I want to kind of bring that to bear because of your work with children that's so powerful with helping them reorient and sort of get away from drugs or drinking or bad habits, self-destructive habits. In my practice, I kind of like to open up sometimes with what I find is a little bit of a healing joke, because it creates a sense of inclusiveness, which oftentimes in the therapeutic context is not there. It's missing. And it's sort of an I and thou relationship with all of the accoutrement of authority installed in one and not in the other, which becomes very problematic, potentially. So I tell a joke that I love from one of my mentors, Woody Allen, who tells a joke at the end of Annie Hall, if you remember. He says, Woody Allen, who just adores his psychiatrist, that's all of the conversation, says, Doc, my brother, he's completely crazy. He thinks he's a chicken. Oh, the psychiatrist says, well, my God, why don't you bring him in for treatment? And he says, I can't. I need the eggs. So, in that simple way, in one less than a minute, you've created a sense of ease in your client, or in your case, maybe a group of teenagers, and they see that everyone's a little crazy, or as we say in ancient Chinese, a little mashugana. Everybody has a taste. Everybody has a little something that throws them off. But it's not really off. It's that we were created uniquely, and that's our fingerprint. That's our DNA, and it's something to be celebrated. Now, if it goes off way too far, then we're causing trouble for ourselves and for our society. But if we can make use of our uniqueness and know that we're all in this together, I love Reverend Jesse Jackson, who also said some years back, he said, you know, we all may have come over on different boats, but we're all in the same boat now. I love that, you know. Again, it's a sense of inclusion and those things that have so long separated people, like color, race, gender, age. Forget about it. Uh-huh. They don't have a real place in the larger human family. Oh, they have a place in that it's fun that there are women in the world and we're men. That's fun. That there are different colors of the rainbow in our, you know, Homo sapiens species. Oh, my God. That's like having lots of beautiful flowers in a garden. Who wants all one-colored flower?
I could not agree more. Unfortunately, it appears as though the people that gain the most publicity are the ones that are trying to do just the opposite. You know, there's so much out there that I think that we're all bombarded with, which is trying to show in some way that there's a negative side to this, and there's not as many of us like yourself that are presenting it in such a way, as you just said, this is just something that is a beautiful joining of everybody. I mean, so. Yeah. But you know, which is, again, this is one of the reasons why I started this whole show, is because I want to get out more word like you're saying right now. So thank you for that. And at this moment, we've got an email question coming in from a listener, and this one reads, I am very fascinated by this topic. As a physical therapist in Southern California, I believe that more than 50% of the people I treat who are stuck in negative emotional patterns have a difficult time healing, or when they do, or another condition then takes over whatever the first ones was. It says, I also have observed that patients who laugh and have a happy attitude heal much faster from injuries and do experience recovery. I'd like your opinion on wellness and laughter and a positive disposition. As I see it, as a physical therapist, so it sounds like we've got somebody here that is, you know, they start out on the physical side, but they're recognizing exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that is a really good inquiry, and he is on to exactly that delicate and profound relationship. between attitude, when it comes down to it, it's really attitude. And do we see the glass half full or do we see the glass half empty is very fundamental to this whole conversation. And he's right. There are people who, when they have a good attitude and they have laughter and they make the positive affirmation, I can heal, or even better, I am healing. I am healing. Or I have healed. I am what I wanted to be. I see. I visualize. I feel what it's like to be wholly healed, that my body is working at optimum. That's a message, and this is the way the brain works. It works through intentionality. It works through messaging. And, you know, one of my old teachers of neurolinguistic programming, Alan, Richard Bandler, one of the founders of it, I studied hypnotherapy with him, Ericksonian hypnosis with him many, many moons ago.
Wow. And, so did I, by the way.
Oh, did you? Excellent, excellent. Now, that guy is a comedian, you know?
Yes.
He's a little nuts. But he's a comedian.
Yep.
And he had us rolling in the aisles during what was supposed to be a serious class. There was nothing serious about it except that we were able to help a lot of people. And that's not serious. That's just rewarding, you know, because the techniques are so powerful, as you know, having studied it yourself. But he used to talk about this exact phenomenon of how the mind heals the body and setting the intention, and then the body will follow. And in a book he wrote many moons ago called Using Your Brain for a Change, and, which is beautifully exemplary of his sense of humor, he talked about rather than just letting the brain run its normal gamut, which goes here and goes there and it's bouncing around in what Zen calls the monkey mind, he said, harness your brain, focalize your brain, use it to visualize yourself as you want to be, your body to be, your mind to be, your emotions to be, and then it begins to happen. Yes, it does go back to that old idea of fake it until you make it, because when you model something that you want to embody, your brain gets that message. Your subconscious gets that message. The subconscious is rooted in the body itself. So you literally start to shape your life according to your wishes and your intention. Now, I didn't say this is easy, okay? I could. That would probably be a very good message, actually. Even if it's not easy, although with our brains we can start to make it easy. But even if it's not, I say, so what? When is something worth having that was easily gained? Rarely, we know, as adults in life, do things that we want most and to have and to hold come to us just easily. Some things do, and some things do not. And I say, but what's the big deal? I'm here. I want to achieve something. I want to achieve a fully working body in the case of the physical therapist's clients. I'm going to do it. And there's a whole other thing that I was thinking of while listening to your reading his email, Alan, which is that, and I have a good physical therapist friend, and I experienced this when I was in acupuncture practice. I did kind of a dual practice, both as a therapist and counselor, as well as acupuncturist. And now I'm morphed that into stress management counseling using biofeedback. That people want to tell their story. A huge amount of healing comes without lifting a finger, purely through powerful, real, deep listening. In this world, with so much input, there isn't a whole lot of place for output. There isn't a lot of listening, but there is a lot of talking. And there's actually a lot of jabbering even more than meaningful conversation, which you engage on in this show, and I dare say I do on mine, A Better World Radio. But it's not common, and it needs to be made more common. And in the role of therapist, physical therapist or otherwise, listening to the story of the client and how they feel they have gotten into this place is a profound act of love. That was the other part of my article in the Huffington Post, the health benefits of laughter and love. And while love is underneath everything, we haven't really spoken much directly about it. But I am saying that there is such a powerful, nonverbal, curiously, communication of love in the serious, real act of listening. And a lot of people can get healed from that alone, even if they're in somatic distress, by being listened to. All of a sudden, their limbs and everything start to gain greater motion and movement and fluidity. It just happens. I've seen it in my own work.
Well, and for everybody out there that's listening, and unfortunately we are running out of time, but let me tell you, go to www.abetterworld.tv. You can read that article from the Huffington Post. Mitchell, thank you so much for being with us. And I know that you're in the middle of writing Sacred Stewardship. Can we have you back? And hopefully
Absolutely.
We'll be able to share with everybody the release of your next book.
Absolutely. I'll have more articles on the HuffPost before that book gets done, but anytime, Alan. It's really my pleasure.
Mitchell, thank you. And for everybody out there, please listen to this next message and have a wonderful week. Thank you.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com. And search One Family's Battle, onefamily_sbattle. And you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words.